So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review.
If you're even thinking about changing the channel to our competition, fans, do not. Because we understand that Mick Foley, who wrestled here one time as Cactus Jack, is going to win their world title. Gonna put some butts in the seat.
Mr. Sacco! Rock tasted Mr. Sacco at rock bottom!
Rock, look out!
He can taste it again, and he does! Mr. Sacco! Mankind is locked in the mantle of a claw with Mr. Sacco.
Mr. McMahon, you gotta do something!
The Rock may be out!
No!
No disqualification!
Yeah.
And there's Billy Gunn! Billy Gunn on Shamrock! DX and the Crawford team are going at it!
Look out!
Welcome to Review Away. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John.
Boy,
what a celebration.
How was your New Year's?
Oh, God. I was in the Bahamas, of course.
Wow.
Or on my way to the Bahamas. And
mentally, it seems like you're still there.
It does seem that way. Boy, does it.
I missed you on Monday for Raw.
Yeah.
It begins.
I know. I couldn't believe it when he showed up.
Yeah, it made sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all kind of expecting it, but I didn't see that coming. I tell you, did not see that.
Yeah.
How was your New Year's?
Yeah, it was good. I'm not typically a big New Year's fan, to be honest. A big Christmas fan, but New Year's is just kind of like a...
Let's rewind even a bit earlier. I mean, what did you think of Lesnar Overeem?
Well, we knew it was going to be short.
Yeah.
I thought so.
We expected it to be short, but...
Well, then it played out as it did.
Yeah, and I didn't see that coming either.
So how does he fare against Junior Dos Santos?
Well, you can look at it many different ways. I think he has advantages. Certainly, he has the power in his fists, and... certainly, he has the motivation after what we saw.
I think Dos Santos is just too good a boxer, though.
Yeah, but he has so many other advantages in other areas.
It's going to be a big money fight for them in 2012. So
yeah, it's going to be great.
And now this also sets up, coming out of this, you've got the Dos Santos challenge and... you take the other bracket and gets Cain Velasquez potentially. I think that's two good... big heavyweight fights.
There's a lot that can be done, and we had a great preview. Well, what an eventful couple of days.
Weird watching a UFC on a Friday night?
It was, but I liked it.
Yeah.
It was something different.
Yeah.
I think.
And airing at 10 o'clock. It's back to 10.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, can't say enough.
Wrestling.
Yeah.
What a Raw here from January 4th of 1999 in Worcester, Massachusetts. I remember this Raw so vividly. Actually, I remember one reaction on this show very vividly.
Uh-huh.
The rest of the show is kind of was a blur until I rewatched it. But the main event, when I think of the Attitude Era, I always think of this final 10 minutes of Raw.
Sure.
It was one of the most memorable Raws for me, at least the main event portion. I don't know if I've ever heard as loud a pop than I did for Austin's return.
Well, this was, of course, for me during my dark period in professional wrestling when I stopped watching.
Yeah.
However, this was probably the day that I came back. And
were you watching Nitro?
Yeah. It wasn't because of this show. It was because of what was on the other channel. I was watching Nitro on this day. The Nitro, of course, featuring the infamous finger poke of doom. And, boy, I was watching that, and I also heard Tony Giovanni shout, "Hey, we know what's going to be on the other show. They're going to put the title on Cactus Jack.
Give me a break."
Give me a break. And I was like, what? I'm not going to watch that garbage. That'll put asses in seats. That's what I said. And I stuck around for the finger poke of doom and the reformation of the NWO. And that brought me back.
This, if there was ever, like, a turning point. I mean, WWF had already overtaken WCW earlier in 98 in the ratings. But if ever there was WCW, it's not like this company just collapsed and was dead in 98. They were a very solid company, television ratings-wise, buy rates, live event attendance was still great. That Georgia Dome show, holy Christ.
Yeah.
This, to me, was the changing of... This was the turning point for me, was January 4th.
Absolutely.
Because you compare the two shows and how Nitro ended, I would say this was the most important night of the Monday Night Wars.
No doubt.
This was the turning point.
Completely agree.
So this was actually taped, which I don't think shocks anyone because that was the whole story with Mick Foley. This was taped the prior week at the end of December, and then airing head-to-head with a live Nitro, a three-hour Nitro from the Georgia Dome, which was promoted as Bill Goldberg challenging Kevin Nash for the WCW title 8 days after he lost the title at Starrcade. But then Hogan returned, Goldberg was arrested for sexual harassment, and it ended up being Hogan and Nash with the finger poke and the reformation of the NWO.
Uh-huh.
And the WWF countered with this show.
Yeah, if you want to, of course, find out everything that happened with that episode of Nitro, you can listen to our review archive. We did review that show.
January 2010, we reviewed that.
Okay, so 2 years later, let's look at what WWE had to offer.
Well, the show starts off with the Corporation coming out, and as we mentioned last week with Jim Ross being off due to his Bell's palsy, Michael Cole was still the play-by-play announcer. He was with Jerry Lawler for the show. And the Corporation comes out. Vince, Shane, Patterson, Briscoe, Kane, Ken Shamrock, Big Boss Man, and Test. And Cole says that Vince fired Shawn Michaels as commissioner last week. And I thought watching Rock Bottom set us up very well to review this show. So we understood what was going on. It was 3 weeks apart.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Shawn Michaels had been fired. And Vince took the sweet chin music from Shawn. And Vince says here that if Shawn shows up tonight, he will be dismembered.
Dismembered?
I remember as a 14-year-old not knowing what this meant. Hmm. I thought it meant like no longer having your membership in a club or something. Well, it meant something way more violent.
He could mean it the other way, but yeah.
I think he meant
he's going to cut his dick off.
Yes, which would have kind of been stealing your own angles. They had already done that by this point.
Yeah, they did.
So he says that anyone who had anything to do with the emotional scarring of his son Shane is going to pay. And this all had to deal with an angle from the prior week where Shane McMahon was beaten down by Mankind. And then they show Shawn Michaels arriving in the back. And then he comes out and he cuts a promo. And lot of people would be critical of Shawn Michaels' promos, and this would be the style I hated from Shawn Michaels, where everything was just drawn out, and it's like he was doing a voice. He's like, the sheriff is back in town. And then he brings DX out with him, and it's the first time Michaels and Hunter have been paired together since DX broke up in 98. And he tells Vince that his contract as commissioner is ironclad, and Vince even said on television that the commissioner wouldn't answer to anyone, including Vince himself, and that he cannot be fired. The only way he can leave is if he resigns, and he's never going to do that. And Lawler says, great, we have a lousy president and a lousy commissioner. Not happy with the Democrats, apparently, at the time, the Clinton era. And then they go back, they recap last week where they have footage of the McMahons announcing that Vince would enter the Royal Rumble number 30. And he draws it from the basket with all the numbers listed at number 30. And Michaels announces that, no, Austin might be number one, but Vince, instead of number 30th, you're going to be the second entrant into the Royal Rumble. Imagine this. They were planning the Royal Rumble weeks in advance.
Unbelievable.
We had rock bottom set up Austin getting into the Rumble, and here we already knew the first two participants. And this would actually, I think, be a big draw, that if you buy the Rumble, you'll get Austin and Vince starting the match.
Yeah, very smart.
And that was our opening segment. And Michaels also said tonight he has a stone-cold surprise for the corporation. And, of course, Austin had not been on television since rock bottom. So there was definitely a clamoring for his return.
Watching this, it was definitely apparent that Vince McMahon was the biggest heel.
He was so awesome on this show.
Yep. And as well, Austin is the biggest babyface. With DX as a close second, everybody just seemed incredibly over at this time.
The best sign I've seen on any show in years was then featured before the next match, where a girl who couldn't have been more than 10 years old has a sign, and she's missing a tooth, and her sign says, I fought Ken Shamrock. This was so great. If this was legit... amazing.
What, like she actually
the way
Ken
that
Shamrock?
A, you could have time to read the sign and see her smiling where there's no tooth.
Oh
Christ, that took some time to get the joke.
Yeah,
and she was on camera for like 5 seconds. Awesome.
Cool.
Highlight of the show. I fought Ken Shamrock.
Better than
Shamrock attacks 10-year-old girls.
Way better than Foley winning the title.
So our first matchup of the night is Ken Shamrock and Steve Blackman. And the storyline is that Billy Gunn is trying to get an intercontinental title shot against Ken Shamrock, but Shamrock is not willing to give a title shot to a degenerate like Billy Gunn. And they were trying to break off the New Age Outlaws into singles performers at this time because their tag match at Rock Bottom was so shitty.
Was that the reason?
No, it wasn't. It was just they wanted to move them on. But God, that tag match.
It was
gave
awful.
Me nightmares.
Yeah, it was terrible. But by this point, the Road Dogg had already won the hardcore title, and it was Billy Gunn's turn.
These two went back and forth with punches, and then Dan Severn comes out to ringside with a neck brace. A hard collar.
A hard collar, after, of course, having been injured by Owen Hart's pile driver.
Comes out, and Shamrock has the advantage. Blackman then gets a small package for a two count, and Lawler says that Shamrock is giving Dan Severn an icy UFC stare.
I see UFC stare.
An icy UFC stare.
Yeah.
UFC was said twice in this match.
Well, it was no threat back then.
But it was real. And this is fake. Why wasn't the UFC doing better?
Because
that's what everyone tells me, is that one's real, one's fake. That's why one's successful.
No.
I don't understand.
I mean, it is interesting to see these two men, Dan Severn, Ken Shamrock, two successes in the UFC, two names in the UFC, choose pro wrestling over UFC as money-making avenues.
Well, they made a lot more money in 99.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Compare that to today.
And one of the most vocal critics of these two turning their back on MMA and going to the fake shit was one David Tank Abbott.
Is that right? Wow.
Shamrock hits a belly-to-belly suplex. Severn then gets on the apron, and Ken knocks down Severn to the floor, and the referee is distracted with Dan Severn, as Billy Gunn runs in and hits the Famaster onto Shamrock, and Steve Blackman pins the Intercontinental Champion, non-title match, 3 minutes and 26 seconds. And then Shamrock and Gunn are showing fighting in the back, in the locker room area, and they're separated by officials.
Seems like there were a lot of people after Ken Shamrock on this episode. You had Billy Gunn, you had, you know, Dan Severn.
Yeah, it was almost like they were pushing two feuds here with Severn and Gunn.
And now you would assume Blackman as well with the victory.
Pins
over
the champion.
Yeah.
A lot going on with Ken.
But the pay-per-view match at the Rumble ended up being with Gunn.
Mankind comes out, recaps the angle from last week where he attacked Shane and grabbed Pat Patterson by the balls. One of the more memorable Socko claws.
The
testicular claw.
Yeah.
And he says he's done a few things over the past few weeks for the first time, including grabbing a man by the balls, saying suck it without the word please at the beginning of it. And he says he enjoys kicking the McMahon family's ass, and he wants a shot at The Rock's title at the Royal Rumble. And he goes on to make some jokes, and Lawler says, now he's a comedian. Now he is a comedian.
That is correct.
They cut away, I don't know why, to a sign that said, Manned Kind for President. M-A-N-D-K-I-N-D for President.
Manned Kind?
Manned Kind for President. Is that a tough word to get right?
I'm trying to think if that's some type of pun, some type of witty thing that's just going over my head. But
it's like they took Mankind and confused it with Mandible Claw. And fucked up his name.
How do you...
This was a blatant cutaway to this sign. It's like, look how stupid these people are that watch us. Why would you advertise on our show for these morons?
Mankind. Okay.
So Mankind's in the ring. Mankind is in the ring. And Vince comes out. He calls Mankind a monster. And that his name even being associated with the WWF title stains the title.
That's what the competition was saying.
Oh, it's very true.
Yeah.
He was playing Tony Schiavone.
Yeah.
And he says, he criticizes Mankind for killing himself for the roar of the crowd and that he doesn't deserve the right to be the number one contender. He hasn't paid his dues and says he will never, ever have that chance.
Great line, I thought. Mankind, Mick Foley of all people, he hasn't paid his dues.
Yes. Great heel line.
Yeah.
That should be the goal of every heel, is to say something that just infuriates you to say, no, that's not true.
Chael Sonnen, perfect example.
You know, as much as we goad him, Michael Cole is...
Yeah.
Michael Cole is not a bad performer.
No.
You can never say that guy's a bad performer. He is a great heel.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the wrong role. So, right after Vince says he will never, ever have a chance, he says... Tonight you're going to have a match with Triple H and the winner gets into the Royal Rumble. But he qualifies it saying, the story of your life, getting close to a title shot but no cigar. And that there will be a special referee for this match with him and Hunter, and that will be Shane McMahon, the man he attacked last week. And that's going to be coming up later in the show.
Like you said, I thought Vince was really
good. Vince McMahon was just so great at this point. He became in years a parody of himself,
and
but this was when he was just an awesome heel.
And overexposed as well.
Way too much. Yeah. When he got involved with all the divas and stuff and doing all this ridiculous shit, the kiss my ass stuff, he became a parody of himself.
Sure.
This was when he was just a fucking great, great heel.
With an amazing babyface to work against.
Yeah.
Well, this whole show Vince was really a part of, but I feel at this time he was probably much fresher with the audience.
98-99 I thought was just the height of the Vince McMahon character. I just thought the guy could do no wrong.
Well, like the audience at the time still probably most heavily...
This was the serious announcer.
Yeah.
And now just the idea of him being a heel
mm-hmm.
was shocking to people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was similar to just people, myself included. When I started watching WCW, it was... When I heard that Hulk Hogan had turned... Like, I watched WCW very sporadically because Canada didn't really cover it too well up here to follow. But when I heard Hulk Hogan turned heel, I went out of my way to see Nitro just because seeing Hulk Hogan as a heel was novel in and of itself. And here, Vince McMahon, the guy for years and years had been the straight play-by-play announcer, was the heel. That was just something in and of itself,
mm-hmm.
much less a great program he was in. Something not great was... China, who had brought her friend Sammy to Raw.
Sammy.
Sammy.
I was confused. I had no idea who this was.
Well, I think all Canadians were very confused because segments like this aired, but the reveal segment a few weeks later would never air in Canada.
Oh.
So we just had to hear references to, like, veiled comments about Mark Henry being confused with Sammy. But they couldn't outright say what was weird about Sammy.
Okay. Sammy, China's friend, is a woman, we're led to believe, is a woman in a dress, very nice dress, and a big red-haired wig. So much so that, so big that you can't really see your face clearly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looked like she had just swallowed an apple.
Hmm.
So, our next matchup is Mark Henry and Goldust, with Teddy Long as the referee, meaning that all three people here are still employed by WWE.
That is right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Goldust gets beaten down. There was no stipulation here about anyone stripping.
No.
So Goldust, not a lot of heat in this match.
That's right. If you want a nice contrast, watch a Goldust match today.
Rock Bottom was really an outlier. This was more Goldust remaining at normal levels. Goldust gets beaten down. I thought these two just worked horribly together. There was some really shitty wrestling at this point in the WWF, and it really goes to show you how much story supersedes in-ring. Like, there was some shit on this show.
Totally.
Like, Goldust and Mark Henry. Goldust hit these low leg kicks, a weak spine buster to Mark Henry. Then we see an elbow drop by Henry. Cole and Lawler just, like, checked out of this match and started talking about Austin and Vince. No one complained. And then China and a girlfriend show up at the top of the ramp, and Henry is distracted looking at the two women. And Goldust drops him, sets him up in the corner, and hits the Shattered Dreams.
Then that gets disqualified. The match ends.
There's no bell. His music just plays. This was the infamous sports entertainment finish, but they did explain that Teddy Long has disqualified Goldust.
Why would you play his music then?
Because he's won the battle. Or maybe he's won the war but lost the battle. So, Goldust loses here.
No, it's stupid.
But he got it to kick a man in his balls. So China comes into the ring with her friend and tells Mark that the other night with him was incredible, but that he's too much man for her. China was a horrible promo. I thought she was just the shits here. And she introduces Mark to her friend Sammy and says, she's just the way you like women. She's tall, she's an exotic dancer. And she hints to Mark Henry at a potential three-way. And Mark Henry does the nasty plunge onto his back and is out.
He's stunned.
Mark Henry was great, I thought. That's a giant man falling backwards.
Oh, it's just a back bump. So what? Okay, he might have been all right.
I couldn't do that. That's one of those mental bumps.
No, because he's much bigger than you or I. He has a lot more, much more. Anyway, that aside, sure, he could have been okay in this gimmick, but boy, what a terrible storyline.
And this was probably not even the worst storyline Mark Henry had to endure.
Oh, absolutely.
Within a one-year period, he had the transvestite gimmick, he had Mae Young and the Hand, and he also, an angle a lot of people forget, is that he started bringing his sister to the arena, and then it was revealed that he was a sex addict, and his first sexual experience was with his sister.
Wow.
Incest, transvestite, and Mae Young's Hand, all in a year. And this guy was like, just bring it on.
How did he ever recover from that?
To become world champion.
That is amazing. Good for him.
God, this company was so disgusting.
Hey, but you know what? People loved this stuff back then.
No, they didn't. No one ever liked this shit. Okay. It was bad then and it was bad now.
What are you talking about? They loved the tease of a woman potentially getting naked on a pay-per-view show.
Okay, I'm not talking about a strip tease. I'm talking about
it's on the same
incest
level. Yeah,
transvestite
it's
going
on,
down on you.
It's on the same level.
I don't think anyone remembers the good old days of Mae Young having a hand come out of her.
Everybody remembers that, John.
It's a very big deal, a difference between Deborah teasing her tits coming out versus incest.
Okay. Well, enlighten us for people who don't know. What happened with the Sammy character in this story?
Well, again, it never aired in Canada.
Yeah.
Imagine me on the sports network this was airing. they eventually went on a date, and I think the angle was that Mark Henry goes down on her and discovers her penis.
And who was Sammy?
Let's see if it's...
Was this...
You know what, Way? We're going to find it on YouTube right now.
Okay.
Okay? Because I've never seen the segment. And me and Way are going to give you our candid commentary about Sammy and Mark Henry. This is what we do for a living. You type in Sammy Mark Henry, and the third thing that comes up is Mark Henry screws up cage door opening. Remember that SmackDown where he couldn't... It was the first YouTube video ever.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. China and Mark Henry segment.
All right. Let's watch this.
Canadian premiere, I think. If this ever loads.
Do what? What's she gonna do?
Okay, I lied. We didn't do nothing.
What?
We didn't do the wild thing. We didn't do the mild thing. We didn't do no thing. Okay, is that good enough? Please. Just let me have a tape. Don't show
tape?
My mom's here.
Uh-oh, there's a tape.
Look, he confessed that.
Oh, is that his real mom? Oh, Jesus.
You wanted to screw me? Now you're screwed. Roll the footage anyway.
Oh,
what?
God.
Footage?
What would TSN do for 5 minutes?
What? She's vindictive. Honey, it's gonna be okay.
Oh,
trust me, babe. I know how to make you feel better, baby. Uh-oh.
Fuck. Oh my God. His mother's in the crowd. Oh, this poor guy. Oh, she just said my boy. That's my boy.
Mother's like, oh, you brought me here for this?
She's thinking he's making $1 million a year. And it's not worth it. This is horrible. I'm offended, dude.
Do we know that that's his real mother?
She's doing a very convincing job, though.
That's... What? What are they censoring? She's clothed. He's grabbing her ass?
They keep cutting back
to
the mother.
Dude, that's legit, man. That is not an actress.
Oh, holy Jesus!
China, you are terrible.
Get this from your thick skull, Mark. I would not have sex with you if you were the last man on Earth. If I was the last woman on Earth, we just had to keep the human race going.
You'd have to pay her for that.
$250,000.
Oh my gosh!
Well, you're right. He did have it coming.
I feel so terrible for this woman.
Oh, China! She just had an insult.
Ugh. Poor Mark Henry, man. Holy shit. That's on the level of the worst stuff they've ever done to Jim Ross. That's way worse. Oh my God. What a horrible company. Oh, that's... I never knew the mother was in the... I guarantee you that's a legit mother.
Probably. Maybe. But nonetheless, thank you, TSN. Thank you, CRTC, for saving the country of this.
Oh, horrible.
Who is Sammy?
Probably
some indie guy. Okay. Oh boy,
this poor guy. That would. Oh.
All right.
So that was that. From there we move on. Oh, they show highlights of Jesse Ventura becoming the governor, which had happened 2 months earlier in November. Uh-huh. But at first they were kind of
being sworn in. Right here.
Yes, there were some issues. Like, Jesse Ventura, like, sued the WWF. So there were some ill feelings here. And as they go to this video, Jerry Lawler says, The WWF opened up the door for the governor's mansion for Ventura. What's next? As if the WWF made this happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, in a weird roundabout way, he won that settlement against the WWF for a significant amount of money, no doubt of which went to part of his campaign fund. So in a weird way, I'm sure the WWF did pay for a portion of this.
Huh. Now they're taking credit.
No, now they're putting out a home video of Jesse Ventura.
Well, yeah, right after this, they air a commercial advertising the Ventura VHS, which I'm assuming was already out before this.
No, this came out in conjunction with him becoming the governor.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they only put this out because he had won.
Well, you know what? If there's one thing that they're really good at, this company is really good at milking any type of mainstream publicity that they got. At all
That's
times.
True. And what's interesting is that the whole lawsuit was over Jesse Ventura's likeness being used on home videos because he sued them over royalties, and that is why to this day they will go out of their way to avoid using Jesse Ventura voiced matches, which is very difficult.
Really?
They will have to. They just have to pay him now if they use him. So if they want to put out a WrestleMania box set, they're not going to revoice six WrestleManias. You know what I mean? Uh-huh.
What were the grounds of that settlement?
A lot of guys, from my understanding, signed over their rights, so they weren't given anything. And Jesse never signed that, and then the dispute, I'd have to look up the exact...
That's amazing, though, that he's able to win something
issues.
That like that.
But he took him to court and won. It was, yeah. I think, close to, a million he won from that.
Well, I'm glad he's... I'm sure he's glad to be associated with this product as a governor.
Just 8 months after this, he'd be the guest ref at SummerSlam as the governor.
There we go.
Amazing. They show a vignette of Dennis Knight, Midian, who's in a torture cell after being attacked by the Acolytes last week. And then they come back, and the announcers are in shock. But the Godfather comes out, and their attention is diverted from a man being tortured and locked up.
Yeah, well, there are more important things, like... Hoes.
The whores are in the house in Worcester. And we've got the Godfather taking on Test, who must have had the most generic theme music ever. This was before his Test theme. This was so generic.
Yeah.
Godfather lands a big leg drop for a two count, sets up Test in the corner, and he hits what Michael Cole calls the choo-choo train.
The choo-choo train.
Valvinus comes out. He's standing on the ramp. And Test hits a big boot. They fight to the floor. And then Test throws the Godfather into the steel post. And both get counted out at the two-minute mark. And then Test and Valvinus, who Test attacked last week, they start fighting on the floor. And they continue to brawl up the ramp. Security tries to separate them. And then we go to the back. And DX and Shawn Michaels are hanging out. And as I wrote here, being friends.
Being friends. So much so that
What could go wrong? What could go wrong? Everyone's on the same page and reminiscing about their New Year's.
They're just friends, and yeah, that'll last.
Then we go to the top of the hour, and we've got Triple H against Mankind with Shane McMahon as the special referee. And Hunter works over the arm. He's on offense for the first 2 minutes of the match until Mankind sends him to the floor and hits a baseball slide. And then Mankind, he holds onto the ropes to avoid a sunset flip, but Shane kicks his hands off of the ropes. Hunter rolls him up in a sunset flip, and Shane fast counts him at 2 minutes and 56 seconds, so Hunter is in the Royal Rumble.
And Mankind is not.
And then Hunter gets on the microphone, says he's sorry, but business is business, and he'll take it any way he can for the WWF title, but says Happy New Year as he kicks Shane in the gut, hits him with a pedigree, and tells Mankind he's all yours. And Mankind goes to break his shoulder when Vince, Briscoe, and Patterson come out. And they're at Mankind's mercy here, threatens to break Shane's arm. And Mankind says, I don't want a shot at the Royal Rumble. I want my title shot tonight. And Vince reluctantly agrees. But Mankind wants a no DQ match, and Vince agrees. Vince's facials were just great here. His son was here. It was as if he was watching his son get killed.
Yeah.
And the match is on, The Rock and Mankind, later on tonight. And Rock comes out to complain, saying he isn't ready. And
the moral is, threats get you what you want.
Yes. Bullying works.
Totally.
And impromptu title matches could draw at this point in time in the WWF.
Are you serious or joking?
No, I was serious. I mean, this was, you know, in this era, I mean, this
what was
this company was super hot right now, and I mean, you could question, you know, giving away a title change on free television, but
what was the decision behind that? Doing this,
I think it was
TV.
Just to counter Nitro with something big.
Hmm.
You had the return of Austin, and you had a title change going against a live Nitro. And I mean, television ratings, they put tons of stock into them back then because they felt that, you know, they were in a war each week to have the biggest number, and there was a big premium placed on them. And I think that's kind of, that mentality's never left them since that time. Next match, we've got the Elusive Edge. He is unique to say the least, as Michael Cole identifies him, taking on D'Lo Brown. And Edge hits a Hurricane Rana, then a clothesline to the floor, and then a tope to the floor onto D'Lo. Get an exchange of chops in the corner. Brown hits his running powerbomb and then poses on the turnbuckle. Edge comes back with a drop kick and then a cross body for a two count. And then PMS comes out, and Cole says, it must be that time of the month. Terry and Jacqueline. And Terry is pregnant and acting pregnant, holding her stomach.
Yes.
They made it as blatantly clear that she was pregnant.
She's pregnant, yeah, of course.
Lawler says she's going through morning sickness, but Terry will not announce who the father is.
Hmm.
And Terry gets on the apron. D'Lo approaches her, and Terry backs off, and she falls to the floor on her stomach.
Don't you just hate that? Don't you just hate it when it happens? Pregnancies in wrestling, always something will always go wrong. You put a pregnant woman next to a wrestling ring, something will go wrong.
Terry is on the ground. The match ends at this, and Terry is taken out on a stretcher. And this, you know, as ridiculous as this segment was, this was an incredibly controversial angle at the time.
Was that right?
They were doing a miscarriage in wrestling.
Wow.
I mean, look at what we got on this show. We had torture, we had a miscarriage, we had a transvestite.
Yeah.
All the makings of a great Attitude Era show.
Absolutely. What else is there? A plunder match with
dismemberment.
Dismemberment as well.
A lot of angles on this show, like big angles.
Everything except finishes, because this was the third match. That didn't have a finish, and it just seemed like a lot of guys...
This was a complete backdrop for the Terry angle. There was no reason for this match other than D'Lo is in the ring with somebody.
The outcome of these matches simply didn't mean a thing. You had guys willingly disqualify themselves. You had guys fight to count out without caring and no mention. Just wrestling just didn't matter, and maybe it still doesn't.
If there's one line of dialogue I'd never want to hear in a wrestling show, it's a woman crying, yelling... My baby, holding her stomach.
Well,
I found that a little disconcerting.
It's happened many times. Are you kidding me? Especially with this next participant.
This was just too ridiculous for me. And I think I have a wide range. But this miscarriage.
That's where you draw the line.
I think this ended up being. I mean, to silence some critics that were very vocal about this. I think it was ended up revealed that Terry was just never pregnant to begin with, and it was all a ruse.
Oh, they would wait till later to do actual miscarriages.
Oh, that's right.
With Mae Young, with Lita.
Lita, yeah. Yeah, that's right, Lita. Well,
speaking of,
this was the precedent. This was the first. You always remember the first.
Exactly. Speaking of Lita, the father of that fetus,
Kane. We come back from break, and Terry's in the back crying about her baby as D'Lo looks on, and Cole just says, this is tragic. And then Kane comes out with Shane, Patterson, and Briscoe, and Kane's got a Briscoe Brothers Body Shop sign taped on his back.
He had this sign taped to his back the entire show, and Kane was just brought back by Vince from the insane asylum, and man, at this point, he was just a joke. He was Abyss, basically.
Yeah, he really was. Oh, you look at some of this stuff, dude, and it's like, if the ratings were shit at this time, it would be so easy to explain.
There'd be no...
Because some of this stuff is so out there, but in a weird way, like, I thought the storytelling, like, this was a show that told a story from beginning to end with Mankind, and as weird as this shit was, I thought their continuity was way better at this point.
Hmm.
Way, way better.
Sure.
Some of these angles were just so out. The guy who escaped the insane asylum, oh no, Vince got him out of the insane asylum, but you must join the corporation or we'll send you back.
Mm-hmm. They were very out there, and... they were,
but this worked at the time.
Yeah,
like you just can't deny it. It worked at the time.
It was a fresh idea.
I don't think any of this stuff would click today. I think people would shit on a lot of this today.
I think it's been overdone. And
yeah,
for the past 10 years, I think
it was novel at this time.
Yeah, we're sick of it.
So they're all out there, and then Shane announces Kane will be in a handicap match tonight, and the opponents will be Gerald Briscoe and Pat Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince comes out and says, anyone responsible for Shane's emotional scarring will pay. And he blamed Patterson and Briscoe in part for the Mankind attack last week for not defending Shane's honor. So this wasn't even a match. It was just Kane attacking both. Patterson tried to ward off Kane by offering him a cigarette. Kane attacked both. Hit both.
A condom.
Give him a condom?
Yeah, he held up a condom.
Awesome. So much I miss here. Briscoe takes a choke slam. Patterson takes a choke slam. I thought Patterson was hilarious here. At one point when Kane's back was turned, he grabbed a chair to go hit him.
Yeah.
And then when Kane caught him, he just put it down to offer him a seat to sit and rest.
Yeah, it's
very good. And Shane is doing commentary here. But then Kane grabs Shane by the throat. But Vince instructs him to stop or he will send him to the insane asylum. And Vince announces Kane as the winner. And Vince and Shane hug at the entrance.
Yep. This show really, you know, is built around Vince McMahon.
Oh, yeah.
He is the pretty much the only heel.
Well, it's like, hilarious because I watched this on YouTube, and they've got, like, the little screen grab for each video, and it's like Vince is in, like, 6 of the 9 videos.
Yeah,
it's like he was all over this show.
Uh-huh.
Another video of Dennis Knight calling for help, and then the acolytes come in and say, he's ready for you.
He's ready.
Another angle that would not end up airing on Raw was when they would transfer him over into, I guess, Midian, the Undertaker's disciple, where they would sacrifice Midian, and they had, like, a sword or a knife or something and went to go stab him, I think. And there was blood for special effects. Like, they had him, like, on an altar or something.
Oh, boy.
Again, this didn't air on Raw, so I haven't seen it.
We'll wait for that.
Yeah,
for,
the sacrifice.
Yeah, we'll do live commentary with that one, too.
Road Dogg and Al Snow for the hardcore title. Snow comes out in a blood-soaked shirt after he was doused in blood by the Brood a few weeks ago. And he hides under the curtain at the entrance to jump Road Dogg at the start of the match. And Snow, they fight to the ring, comes off the apron, gets a chair thrown into his face, and then sends Road Dogg into the audience. Snow hits a moonsault off the barricade, but Road Dogg moves. Snow goes through a table. There's cookie sheet shots. Snow takes a hip toss through a table at the entrance onto the floor. As they fight to the back, they're throwing potted plants at each other. Road Dogg goes to use a fire extinguisher, but it won't work. Then they fight out into the snow. And the puns just flew at this point.
Oh, boy.
Al Snow. And it's snowing?
A snow shovel for Al Snow.
How ironic. Road Dogg takes Al Snow into a garbage bin, into a door, which was made out of steel. And it ends with Road Dogg hitting a pile driver onto a wooden crate for the win at 8 minutes and 39 seconds. A Broadway match by Raw standards at this time.
This went on, I thought, for way too long.
Yeah,
but way too long. And, I mean, I'm not a fan of these matches. This was like as typical a WWE plunder match as you could get.
But this was when they were still relatively new.
Sure.
But, yeah, this
well,
was...
Well, my point is, I'm not a fan of these matches, but, you know, how much can you really complain? The crowd was, like, really loving this stuff.
Yeah. They showed Dennis Knight being dragged into a room. Quite the progression during these vignettes. And then Shawn Michaels, what a dramatic scene this was. He hugs Hunter, and DX is with them. Everything's great. He says, I'll see you guys soon. And DX walks off saying, maybe, maybe not.
Ooh.
And then it cuts to outside, and Shawn's going to his car, but, oh, he forgot something. And he goes back, and the door's locked. He can't get back into the arena. And then we hear, "Hey, Sean," and they go to commercial. I thought this was so dramatic, and I don't know if this was the video cutting out.
No, they went to commercial, yeah.
This was great.
Yeah.
It was just like, "Hey, Sean," and then you had the whole commercial to wonder, oh no, what happened to this guy?
Sure.
And we come back, and this was done all as if it was live. Mm-hmm. You never saw the attack. And they were like, they recap Michael's being locked out, and someone calls him outside, and it's the corporation. And they attack Michaels, and this was like right out of Scarface, where the camera just goes to the wall, and you just hear them destroy Shawn Michaels. And it's all left to your imagination to imagine what they are doing to this man. Mm-hmm. And then they cut to him where his face has been put through a windshield. He's all bloody. I thought this was one of the a great attack.
Yeah.
This was all left for your imagination.
Yep.
And it was so much more effective.
And you didn't have to do anything for people to take it seriously. Like, you didn't have to actually show any of these stunts. You didn't have to drop a car on a guy. I feel like almost this was probably more effective than doing something crazy and stupid live for people to
see.
I
thought this was great.
Yeah, this was good.
And the payoff was amazing. Because 3 weeks later, Sean would be in a pre-tape without a scratch on him.
Oh,
and well. Never referenced this attack ever again.
They heal fast.
Yeah, well. And then we go to our main event. The Rock and Mankind in a no DQ match for the WWF title. And the one confusing part here was that it seemed like DX was working with the corporation here, where they used that line, maybe, maybe not.
It was a little odd because...
And then their baby faces here in this main event.
Well, what I think they're trying to convey is that they are baby faces, but they still saw Sean as a heel. They still saw Sean as like a two-timing, friend. So they betrayed Sean as baby faces.
So DX is here at ringside for Mankind. I just found it just too...
Sure.
From one segment to the next, I was like, I didn't know how to take DX here. It's like they just helped the corporation, and now they're in the corner against them. Michael Cole explains that when Mick Foley was a child, he always played the Indian in Cowboys and Indians because he always represented the underdog. Did you know?
Yeah, okay.
And the corporation's in the corner of the Rock, and... Cole is just imagining here. He says, "Can you imagine Mankind on the cover of Southwest Airlines magazine with Vince McMahon?" Which was a magazine that Vince and Rock are on the cover of that they showed earlier in the night.
Wow.
Southwest Airlines magazine. Wait a minute.
You really made it.
Oh. The Buttonville Times has an interview. They fight around the ring. Mankind is tossed into the steps, knees first, and flips over. It was a trademark spot of his and one that you just cringed today watching. Mm-hmm. Lawler says, "This won't be a schmoz. Someone will win." Cole says, "Not like the other league."
Yeah.
Rock puts the steel steps on top of Mankind and then drops the other set of steps onto the steps. That's a tongue twister. Rock gets on commentary, goes to spit water, but Mankind makes his comeback and beats him down. And then Mankind gets on commentary, but Rock attacks him with a ring bell. And Lawler again says, "This isn't a main event that starts 2 minutes before they go off the air." I love these jabs at the time. They were.
I miss them, man.
Impressive.
I kind of miss them.
Are you telling me, Ron, SmackDown, you could ever have this kind of...
Oh, no.
This felt like comments that were like, yeah, they're subtly jabbing the opposition. It felt real.
And you're not going to get them
because it was.
Yeah, and you're not going to get them with TNA and the WWE because the WWE doesn't even acknowledge...
And it means nothing when TNA does them.
Yeah.
It feels petty. Cole, I thought, was actually really good in this match in terms of getting Mick Foley across. The whole show... was great at Mick Foley, this guy, he could never be champion. I mean, he's Mankind.
Yeah.
It just told a great story for 2 hours. And Cole, I thought, was really, really good in this main event.
Yep.
Rock hits the corporate elbow, gets a two count. And then Mankind, he runs to the ropes and Bossman grabs him, turns around, and Rock hits him with a belt shot, but kicks out at two. Crowd is really into these near falls. Mankind then DDTs Rock onto the belt, another near fall.
Did they explain that this was no DQ earlier?
Yeah, they did, because that was when Mankind had him in the lock.
Okay.
He made sure it was no DQ.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Another near fall. He pulls out Socko. And then Shamrock comes into the ring with a chair to break up Socko. Billy Gunn runs in, takes out Shamrock. crowd loved these Billy Gunn run-ins throughout this show.
Yeah. You had a lot of over baby faces.
A lot of guys were over. I mean, it makes such a difference when your crowd is hot. And this leads to a DX Corporation brawl. And then Austin's music hits, and this arena explodes.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of the biggest pops I can remember. He comes out, grabs a chair, and hits Rock with a chair shot. Mankind gets on top of Rock. The crowd's going nuts before the official even counts. And then he counts three, and the place goes even louder.
Insane.
8 minutes and 48 seconds. Mankind is the new champion. Vince McMahon was just awesome selling his anger. Cole was great selling the title win. And they cut the music as Road Dogg announces Mankind as the new champion. Foley dedicates the title win to his two kids. This was awesome.
This was a classic moment in Raw history, in Attitude Era history, and perhaps even in pro wrestling history. I mean, everybody remembers a shot of Mick being on DX's shoulders, him with Socko in one hand and the title in the other. It was just, even watching it now, it's just an incredibly heartwarming moment for anyone who's ever identified with Foley's underdog story. And I think if you're a wrestling fan, you probably did. Because here's a guy, you know, that few people expected he'd ever accomplish his dream. And anybody who can identify with that would probably, you know, find some real emotion. And it's segments like these that, you know, really are my favorite parts of professional wrestling, because they carry some real emotion, and it just makes everything seem real and special.
This last segment was, I loved it so much at the time when I watched it back on January 4th of 99, that I grabbed a blank VHS tape and I recorded the replay of Raw to keep this Raw.
Sure.
And yeah, well, I never did that for TV shows, but this one was just so great.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I'm always one to say about, you know, giving away stuff for free on TV. It's like, look at this. We just reviewed Rock Bottom, an absolute complete opposite of this. Crowd sucked, match sucked, finish sucked. And you wanted to prolong that feud. And I just think a third straight pay-per-view with Mankind and Rock, with Mankind challenging, I think a tough sell. It was almost like you had to do something to put Mankind at this championship level. And this was also at a time where this company had the Midas touch. I mean, they were drawing tremendous numbers on pay-per-view, on television. And when you're on fire, it gives you a lot of luxuries to do stuff like this. And the ultimate plan was not Mankind winning the title. It was Austin winning the title later that year at Mania. Whereas, you know, 6 months prior with Hogan and Goldberg, that was like your WrestleMania match that you gave away on television. And it was great for TV and it was a great moment. Whereas this, I don't know if you were compromising too much when you were going to get the rematch at the Rumble anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many people would have been interested in Mankind challenging on a third straight pay-per-view and getting people to pay after that shit finish at Rock Bottom.
I think there are still instances like this today where it's perhaps more worthwhile to give people the surprise pop on TV when they least expect the title change. I mean, look at Daniel Bryan SmackDown deal a couple weeks back when he cashed in the Money in the Bank. I thought that, you know, nobody complained about, hey, they're giving away this for free on TV. It's effective, and it shows a wider audience this character's triumph.
I just want to see what the ratings were for each of these.
Sure. Compare the rating, by the way, to today's. And see how depressing.
January. Trying to look it up here. But, I mean, that was also another thing. You were going against the biggest Nitro of the year. I mean, this was a huge, huge show for WCW. And imagine the bragging rights for WWF if they could say, our taped show beat your live show, featuring a rematch from Starrcade as being what was promoted.
Totally.
Raw ratings, 1999. I know this is all very compelling for people listening to this.
Yeah. We can chop this
up. All right, well, let me just find these here. Raw did an 8.4 on May the 10th of 99.
8.4?
That is unopposed with Nitro. 8.1.
8.1, okay.
Fuck.
Unbelievable. Comparing that to today.
They did a 2.92 back on December the 19th.
Mm-hmm. A couple weeks back, yes.
Okay, I can't find these fucking ratings. Oh, okay. January 4th of 99 did a 5.7 for Raw. Okay, a 5.7.
5.7 for Raw.
Which, it's kind of fluctuates because of the amount of homes that the USA and TNT were in at the time. But
TNT did how much?
TNT, I'm looking up right now. Raw Nitro rating.
Was this the week where the ratings changed and Raw took the lead, or was it another week?
Raw had already been winning, like, handily every week.
What was the actual week that...
Back in April of 98 when Raw won their first night.
And what happened on that show, do you remember?
They promoted Austin and Vince show long, and then it was something where, like, Austin's hand was tied behind his back, and it was the first confrontation between the two.
Okay.
And that swung them. Okay, these Nitro ratings are not... Let me try one more here. January 4th.
This will all be edited to sound perfect.
We'll probably just leave it. Okay. It didn't do a 5.7, is what I'm going to conclude with.
Or maybe we'll just take out this entire...
Yeah, what a fail this was. Fuck. How can they not have just a general list? Like wrestling, there's lists of everything.
I'm sure they exist.
Oh, shit. I found them.
Okay.
I found the ultimate wrestling nerd thing. A chart of every head-to-head battle ever.
Beautiful.
Holy fuck.
I knew we could count on...
Okay.
Wrestling nerds.
Okay. January the 4th, holy fuck, man. Wrestling was incredibly hot in January of 1999. Raw, the taped Raw, did a 5.7 to Nitro, which did a 5.0.
Amazing.
A combined 10.5.
A lot more people were watching wrestling.
It's like 12 million people watching wrestling that night.
It's unbelievable.
And now you struggle to hit 5 with one company.
You struggle to hit 3 sometimes.
Wow. So that's going to lead us over now into feedback and see what people thought of this memorable Raw. Exactly 13 years ago today, Wei.
Wow, that's amazing. That's very good timing.
Amazing. Let's start off with... let's go to Damon Duff. The pop for Austin is like nothing I've ever seen or heard before or since. I don't think anyone could get that reaction now. It's such an unreal reaction. I really miss wrestling being this enjoyable.
Hmm. Sean McEvoy. Oh. Oops. Sorry. Sorry about that. Okay. Sean McEvoy. I was there. In regards to the Austin pop, I've still never heard a live crowd go that bananas for anything in my life. The dude next to me knocked the camera out of my hand because he was flailing his arms around. There was a nasty blizzard that night that made driving home really dangerous. The show ended on such a high note that no one seemed to be upset about the weather. They were building snowmen outside the Centrum. Wow, very descriptive review from...
Never seen that after a wrestling show. Alexander Rios. Can't say I remember too much from this particular episode of Raw, other than the fact that Nick Foley won the WWF title, and the fact that over on the WCW side, they shot themselves completely in the foot with their ridiculous finger poke of doom between Kevin Bash and the then black and white piece of shit. But anyway, on to Raw. Just looking back into early 1999, Triple H as a mere mid-carder in DX, probably still jealous as hell that The Rock was higher on the card, Shawn Michaels having one of his Attitude-era cameos, still with the bad back and probably pulled out of his gourd, and a much younger and thinner Michael Cole. Maybe Vince should take a look at his pretty boy puppet nowadays the next time he wants to abuse on JR. Not only that, but him saying on camera, "That makes me want to puke," sound exactly like something you would feed to today's Cole through the headset. The pop Austin got when he came out was amazing, much like the one he got on the July 2001 Raw, where he beat down the entire Alliance. Amazing how a taped Raw could once decimate the live Nitro with something upwards of a 5.0, and today, with no other wrestling competition, Raw is squeaking just below a 3, as if it were a hungry mouse begging for a slice of cheese. Anyway, John and Wei, love these classic episodes of Raw.
A hungry mouse begging for a slice of cheese.
You know, the it was one thing when going back to watch this show that, you know, even well into the WWF taking over Nitro, Alexander's right that they were still doing taped Raws every other week. And it kind of flies in the face of the argument of people saying that, well, it's a taped show and it's maybe that hurts the rating. I've never believed that. And I think this was a key. You had live Nitros every week. And it didn't matter to some people because Raw was the hotter product and it didn't affect them at all. Mm. And this was a perfect example here of this January 4th Raw.
Yeah. Adam Port, I'm glad Mark Henry and China never made a video of their night of fun. Promo Henry in the ring was just horrible in every single way. I didn't think that Henry would go from this to being a legitimate world champion over a decade later.
Justin Rosero, I was at this show. Amazing. We have two people who attended this Raw. It was unbelievable, the pop, and my favorite live event to have attended. It was so unexpected because you never thought you would have a major title change on a taped show. When the DX Corporation fight started and then the glass broke and Austin came stomping down the ramp, the pop was deafening, and as each moment unfolded, it became clear what was about to happen. Fully deserved that epic moment, and he became one of the most unlikely WWF champions ever to that point. Love the show, guys. Look forward to another year repping PTB Nation.
Jason Sherman, I remember this show for a few things, and I thought it was pretty good. Although the feel-good moment of Foley winning the belt was great, I don't think it was good to hot potato the world title as much as they did in that era. I do also remember the Road Dogg and Al Snow's match that ended up outside of the in the snow. That made for good television. Solid episode of Raw for the Attitude Era.
Andrew Sheehy, I remember watching the show when I was an 8-year-old little Jimmy. No one thought at that time that this episode of Monday Night Raw would mark the downward spiral of WCW. Mick Foley beating The Rock for the title was a memorable moment at a time when hotshot title wins in the world of pro wrestling were common. Another moment I remember from this episode of Raw was the hardcore title match between the Road Dogg and Al Snow. The ending in the snow, which saw Road Dogg give Mr. Snow the pile driver, was well done in my opinion.
Jack Pisco, this show was a great representation of the Attitude Era. A wild hardcore match, a glorified pregnant ring rat taking a terrifying tumble. Hard shots to the head, a menage a trois offer, and of course a major title change. Just comparing the crowd and the action in the ring to today is just depressing. It seemed to be more of a social experience than it is right now, which is strange considering that this was before Facebook and Twitter. Probably the best line here was from the commentary. This may be a no DQ match, but this isn't going to end in a schmoz or other wrestlers with other wrestlers getting in there. There is going to be a winner, unlike the other league. Yes.
Yes, for a finish that featured the other wrestlers getting involved. Tenise Sarway, I remember watching this at 11 years old, waiting for the title change after Tony Schiavone told the finish of the show with Foley on Nitro. I didn't really care about this edition of Raw, but just that match. Now looking back, the rest of the show was okay. It was solid in-ring. I would not say solid in-ring work on this show. And of course, they had to get their Shock TV, since in the Attitude Era, with the pregnant angle with Terry and the tranny thing with Henry China. Overall, good show with a hot crowd, especially at the end.
Dennis Amaya. After watching both the Nitro and Raw, it was easy to see why the WWF skyrocketed and WCW withered away. The main event was excellent, and the ending minutes of the show were tremendous. The pops at the end of the match were amazing. You rarely ever hear a pop like that these days. Mankind winning the title was a great feel-good moment and one of the top moments in Raw history. Vince McMahon was an excellent heel. His facials were excellent. Overall, the show was a 9 out of 10 and miles better than anything WCW was putting out at the time.
And we'll finish off with Rich Bergman. The cons to this were the promos. Vince and Shawn were too long-winded and took way too long to get their points, and Mankind should not have spoke after winning the title. Another con for me was the end of the Goldust Mark Henry match. You have the world's strongest man down. You can either pin him, go for a submission, keep working him, or get yourself automatically disqualified. The pros were seeing Edge, Henry, and Triple H wrestling as mid-carders. What a concept, having wrestlers pay their dues before bolting them into the title picture. Road Dogg winning the hardcore title and making a big deal out of it. I forgot how over the hardcore title was for a while before Crash Holly got a load of it. And of course, got a hold of it. And of course, Mankind finally winning the title. Few moments in wrestling give me goosebumps, and that is one moment that did. Overall, I give this show a 7 out of 10. And we appreciate your comments there, Rich. And that will finish us off for a Raw, which, for a good reference point, if you want to go back to our archives, we did review the January 4th 99 Monday Nitro. We reviewed that back in January of 2010. If you want to go back into the archives and listen to our thoughts on what was going on the other station on TNT that same night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And maybe someday we will go back and review the January 4th editions of TNA and WWE from 2010.
Yes.
Was that January 4th?
It was January 4th, I believe. Yep, it was. Quite the
2 years ago, wow.
That was 2 years ago. Man, I remember just that was such a fun evening. We all went to Jason Agnew's house. It was a giant group of people, half of which had not watched wrestling in years.
Yep. We had two TVs and we had set up.
Two TVs set up watching wrestling simultaneously. Mm-hmm. One of the most enjoyable wrestling experiences. And didn't last very long.
That was the best. Like, look at how many people it drew to watch the show. I mean, competition is great, and competition is required. So all the best to TNA. That's all I could say. That's my New Year's resolution, is to wish them well.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Wei. I know you were in mid-vacation, came back to do this this show. Even though I got to say, you sound further away than you did during our review portion of this show.
Oh, it's just, I'm standing further away from the mic. That's all.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
That makes sense. But now you are about to get back onto a boat and go back to your vacation, and you will be back with us on Monday for a review of Raw coming up this Monday.
I definitely, yeah. I can't wait to talk about Raw and... Boy,
what did you think about the reveal on Monday night of those videos that we'd seen for weeks and weeks? Did it live up to the hype?
Yeah, well, we talked about it earlier in the show, but let me just say, I couldn't stop thinking about it, and I was completely, completely satisfied.
Well, I hope you guys are satisfied with this show. And next week, Mr. Ting, it is your choice for what we review. So what will you be watching on your vacation or scrambling to get through when you return?
Well, it is Royal Rumble season, and therefore, I think we should take a look at Royal Rumble 1995.
95. All right. Well, that will be our review for next week coming up, and we will, of course, be taking your feedback, and then we are back on Friday with Review and Impact. It's going to be myself and Nate Milton, as Nate holds down the fort with Mr. Ting on vacation. And then this Sunday night on The Law, we're going to be joined by Devin Nicholson to chat about his legal issues with the WWE, Abdullah the Butcher, and qualifying as an alternate for the Canadian Greco-Roman wrestling team. And we'll also spend some time chatting about TNA Genesis. Mm-hmm. So that's coming up all this weekend away. Enjoy the rest of your vacation, and we will hear back from you Monday night for a review of Raw.
Hey, actually, I meant to say 94. I was just looking at it, and I got too confused.
So the Royal Rumble from 94 is going to be coming up. And what better way to end this show than from this gem from 1994? Let's just leave it like that. That was perfect.
what song are you going to choose?
Something from 94. I don't know. Something from Dance Mix 94.
Wow.
White man.